Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. So happy to have my guest today is former BYU quarterback, the great John Beck. John, thanks for taking a few minutes. It's always good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's good to be on.
Look, this makes not only you sound a bit old, it makes me sound really old because I covered you when you were a player, but you're nearly two decades removed from your playing days at BYU. Yet it feels like you've been in the conversation of Cougar fans more than ever in recent years because of your involvement with the quarterback development. You're a quarterback coach, and we see you, talking about BYU all the time. Does it really feel like it's been that long since your playing days?
No, it doesn't. It's crazy to me how time flies. You know, when I see the faces of my children, that's what reminds me of how long it's been. I have a son that will be preparing to serve a mission here pretty soon. And that gets wild. For whatever reason, Robbie Bosco is always what comes to my mind, because when I came to BYU, Robbie was my coach. When I first got offered my scholarship by Lavelle, Robbie was the quarterback coach. And I remember coming home from my mission and walking the halls knowing, all right, like my journey begins. Like I'm going to spend a ton of time in the football facility. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to improve as a player. And I would see the pictures of Robbie in the 84 national championship team. And you see the old helmets and the old jerseys and the like. And it's like this, Robbie played in 84. I'm here in 2003 to 2006. So like specifically that 2004 season when it's the 20-year mark, right? And it's just like, for whatever reason, it's that 20-year mark. And I'm like, I'm literally coming up on the 20-year mark of me graduating from BYU. Like this era right now of 23, 24, 25, and 26, that's my 20-year mark of me being at BYU. And that's just crazy to me, because I was just barely over 20 years old when I started there. And to think like that double of life, it's wild how fast time goes. But I've absolutely loved that somehow through this whole journey and story, a place that has meant so much to me and that I spent so much time trying to practice and train and improve as a player, that I get this cool opportunity to come back and help out in the training, the improvement, and the efficiency of the position that I love so much, which was being a BYU quarterback. And I love being able to be around the guys and the coaching staff and the culture. And it's been a cool experience in my life.
We're going to get into a lot of these details, but obviously after BYU, you go into the NFL, and then there's a time that comes where you have to make the decision, am I going to keep trying for this, or am I going to maybe turn the page and do something else? And every athlete, sometimes it's longer than others, but every athlete comes to that point where they say, well, now what do I do? Did you have a moment like that where it's like, well, this is what I've always done. What do I do now?
I think I always knew I wanted to be around football. I always knew I wanted to be around quarterbacking. I love the team atmosphere. I love the challenges that a team has to take on. I love game day, like stadiums on game day. I just absolutely love it. I love the field. So like I always kind of envisioned maybe coaching, but because of my NFL journey and me seeing what that could look like when you give everything you possibly can, and situationally, it's not favorable. It's just not a position that's going to help you succeed. It's like you're climbing an uphill battle. I realized I've already taken my family on this journey as a player. And there's a lot of difficulties that people don't realize until you're actually in it. And it is not only a gigantic challenge for you as the player, but it's a gigantic challenge for your spouse, your children, for everybody involved. And so to enter that as a coach, I always went, I don't know if that's the best thing. And I was so fortunate that kind of as my playing days were, I didn't know that they were winding down. I was doing things from a training standpoint, a learning standpoint, for my own career development, for me as a player trying to continue to play. I was trying to improve, and I didn't see it until all of a sudden, like, oh my gosh, like I can see this being a bridge. Like I can take everything that I'm learning as a player and I can bridge this into being a coach. And this world, kind of almost through the window of golf, a guy that I knew that was considered the top swing coach to the tour players on golf became an acquaintance and a mentor. And then that linked up with another guy that was a mentor in the throwing world. And I kind of realized, oh my gosh, like this is something that I can see myself doing long-term, bridge into a new era of coaching, a new way of coaching quarterbacks, where I don't have to tie myself to a team. I don't have to tie myself to the circumstances that are out of your control, the ups and downs, but I can plant myself somewhere and have people come out to work with me as quarterbacks. And I get to do what I love to do and not have to do the other things. And it was cool. And I really, you know, that the end of playing football is tough. I had no idea my journey was ever going to take me to the CFL. I couldn't have told you a single team outside of the Montreal Alouettes, because that's who Ben Cahoon played for. And I used to throw to Ben, and that's the only team I knew. I had no idea that my journey would take me there, but it actually allowed me to wean myself off of football. I loved football and I still love football, but with how invested I was, I think an abrupt stop would have been really, really difficult. And I was allowed this weaning off of football and a bridge into coaching that I think fit me and what I needed personality wise well, so that it wasn't just this stone cold done. Because a lot of guys drop into depression. A lot of guys face major challenges when it stops that fast. And I'm grateful that mine didn't have to stop that fast.
When you made the decision that you were going to start this company and you were going to be a quarterback's coach and really focus in on that part of the craft, who was your first client? Who was the first player that you coached under this new umbrella as quarterback coach?
I mean, I would say it was Drew Brees. And it was cool because it was a guy that I had spent the previous 4 to 5 years training with. And so, you know, the whole story was the guy that drafted me to the Dolphins, Cam Cameron, was my head coach. And as soon as I got drafted there, he said, look, here's the plan for you. We're going to put you on the Phillip Rivers, the Aaron Rodgers. You're going to be sitting for a number of years. We're going to develop you. And during this developmental period, I am going to line you up with Drew Brees. So as you get through this rookie year, we're going to get you set up in San Diego. You're going to be training with this trainer. You're going to be throwing with this throwing coach. And you're going to be spending a lot of time around Drew. Well, disaster of a year. He gets fired. New staff comes in. They have different plans. So that all kind of gets set to the side. Well, when I kind of reunite with Cam Cameron in Baltimore, the idea of getting back on track with all of those things that were supposed to happen after my rookie year came to fruition. All right, like, let's do this. I started training with Drew. So because of my familiarity with Drew, that was my link to a guy named Tom House, who became my mentor. And so Drew was continually coming up as I was being mentored by Tom. Well, I was kind of like the link between the quarterbacking and what Drew was getting training-wise, where Tom would be communicating with Drew in terms of quarterback mechanics, efficiency, different things. And then Drew and I would have the conversation of how that linked into quarterback play. And there were many times where Drew would say, hey, John, I want to train over the next couple of days, but I don't have time to go to golf all the way to LA. Let's communicate with Tom and let's have you stay down in San Diego and let's have you meet me at the field and you train me. And so, you know, that was kind of like, I'm training one of the top quarterbacks and he's looking for my eye and my understanding because of things I've learned to perform at a high level. Okay, now let's talk about all the collegiate guys. Let's talk about all the younger players. Let's talk about the guys that were just like me, a second year, third year player trying to improve, that are trying to do what Drew is doing. And this is what I'm doing to help coach Drew. And that was kind of that eye-opening thing to me of, this can be applied to so many quarterbacks when they find out, you know. And when I'm not with Drew and another quarterback comes to the field, it's Tom Brady. And I'm sitting here saying, here are two of the best in the game. When everybody finds out what these guys are doing, I don't want to make it sound like it was the field of dreams. Like if you build it, they will come. But it felt like that. And we used to call Dado Field at USC, where we were doing the training, the field of dreams. Because who would think that a bunch of top tier quarterbacks would be showing up to a baseball field on a college campus to get training. That was like our cornfield in Iowa that we had a baseball field on that these people came to. And it was a really cool experience.
You've been doing this a while, so I think you have a pretty good idea of the evolution of the quarterback position, because you've kind of been through a couple of different eras here, because the evolution of the quarterback, it's changing constantly year after year. And I think maybe the easiest answer to this, or maybe how most people would answer it, would be the mobility of quarterbacks and being able to throw on the run. But where have you seen the quarterbacks that you train, or the quarterback position in general, evolve the most since you started this to today?
Yeah, I think it's the ideas of what was considered what should be and has to be, and now what is viewed as much more open and like what's going to just work the best at the end of the day to make plays. Like, there was an idea of what an NFL quarterback should look like, and you could nail it down to height, to weight, to throws, to capacity, to all these different things. And people were trying to look for, well, here's the model, and let me find something else that looks like the model. And then what I think has happened is minds have been opened. Younger minds have kind of stepped in and said, well, I can really still efficiently work at a high level with this style of quarterback. And then a lot of, I'm going to say, the older minds said, hey, you know what? This can work. And so you looked at draft picks. There was no way 20 years ago we were going to have multiple draft picks under or right around 6 feet at the top of the first round. Well, now that has happened a number of times. Arm slots, arm angles. There were all of these old school drills that were like, no, this is what has to be done. A quarterback has to have the ability to throw over his linemen. I'm looking for the Carson Palmers, the Drew Bledsoes, these types. Stand in the pocket. I want somebody that looks like Vinny Testaverde, right? I want this 6'4 plus guy, and it's got to look like this. And there were so many of these old school drills and ideas of the ball has to be released here, the ball has to be pulled down here. And then now that's changed, and now it's all about windows. And the funny thing is for the guys that were 6'2 and under, that's how everybody played the game anyway. Those guys succeeded by those windows, by the arm slots. But for whatever reason, there was like this, yeah, but that guy may not be able to succeed at the NFL. And so the cool thing is you've seen so much success by these guys that all these ideas have just had holes poked in them, and it's been torn down. And now it's about, find me the guy that can make plays.
Yeah, I've always thought that we're probably missing out on a lot of really high-level athletes because we focus so much on measurables. And if somebody doesn't fit a measurable, then we sort of just cast them off. And I love what you were talking about. And I completely agree that, you know, not just the NFL, but a lot of different leagues, it's more about, but specifically the NFL. I see it more in the NFL than I say I do in the NBA or whatnot. But to your point, if guys can make plays and win, that doesn't matter what your height is. It matters if you can make the plays. And I love that.
I have this memory. My second year in Miami, a much older staff came in. And it was a staff that had like, I loved our offensive coordinator. He had a wealth of knowledge. But some of the guys that came with him were very much old school. Like, these guys had been around the Vinny Testaverdes, the Chad Penningtons, you know, good quarterbacks, great quarterbacks. But I remember, like, that's not my style of play. And I vividly remember this day in practice where I slide up into the left in the pocket. And I played a lot of baseball growing up, tons of summer baseball, spring baseball, more baseball games than football games. And so some of these shortstop moves that I did growing up would just come out in football. And nobody at BYU tried to coach me out of those, like Gary, Brandon, nobody. Like, it was just like, John, like, you got a strong arms. I know sometimes you lower your arm slot. As long as the ball's accurate, we trust you. And I loved that there was like a trust there, like, even if my arm slot was a little bit low. And I remember at that Dolphins practice, I slid up into the left and I had to throw a ball that the way I was going to get the ball there for the way that was my natural flow of the game, I was going to come with a little bit lower slot and I was going to throw like a shortstop. And I remember I did it and my coach got so mad and he was like, that's just lazy. That's just undisciplined. Like, I don't want your feet in that position. I don't want you to throw the ball like that. And I remember feeling so confused because I remember just feeling like, I've completed so many balls like this throughout my career, and the staff that brought me in would have never said a word. They would have just been like, that's the guy we picked doing what he does. But this other staff was in and viewed it as like, that's undisciplined, that's lazy. And it's funny because I see the way that the style of play evolved to, there's nobody calling those plays lazy or undisciplined. Now it's like, that's a cool ability that, you know, we can't train that into guys. Guys naturally have that. You know, and so it, like, those are the things that I like about today's game.
Yeah, look, as a Kansas City Chiefs fan, if at any point Andy Reid ever told Patrick Mahomes, please don't drop down and throw sidearm, I'd be in tears, because we probably wouldn't have three Super Bowls right now. Because you're right, that's how everybody throws. And it's now the highlight film. And that's what makes, this is what makes this quarterback next level. So I could not agree with you more. You did mention baseball, and you said that you played a lot of baseball when you were younger. Do you remember, because obviously you're known for football and you've played football more than half of your life, probably. Do you remember when football first came into your life?
I just have all these memories of like athletics, athleticism, training. And so it's just like an early adoption of athletics. And for whatever reason, football was probably the first one. And then baseball, my dad loved baseball, and just that playing catch with your dad, I think, you know, being a kid of the 80s, when you think of playing catch with your dad, the great American sport of baseball, I can't even remember the first time of like a glove. It was just part of my life, a bat, a ball, a glove. That was it. You know, I was just hitting baseballs like a wiffle ball with that big, huge bat where you can't miss it. I mean, I do have memories of those as well with my dad. So it's just as early as can be, it was a football, baseball, and a bat.
When we return, we'll talk to John Beck about where his love for football originated and how his recruitment to BYU didn't initially go as planned. You're listening to the Deep Blue Podcast.
Hey, Cougar fans, this is Jason Shepherd. I hope you're enjoying another season of great interviews here on Deep Blue. If you love Deep Blue, you should check out our other BYU radio podcasts like Her Why. Lauren McLean talks about everything BYU women's athletics with current athletes and coaches, plus stars from the past. BYU has some of the best women's teams in the NCAA, and you want to hear their unique perspectives. So download and subscribe to Her Why on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find podcasts.
Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My guest today is former BYU quarterback and current quarterback trainer John Beck. John played a lot of different sports growing up, but why did he finally start gravitating towards football as he got closer to high school?
For those that know Mesa, Arizona and the Mountain View Toros, it is an amazing program. To grow up there when I did in the late 80s and 90s, it was an extremely dominant program. And so going to those games on Friday nights, it was a big kind of like ranching, kind of like farming. Like there was a dairy down the street across the road. All the old timers that would come and watch their grandkids or sons and stuff like that. Like they'd show up in cowboy hats and belt buckles. And I mean, it was just like this tough country atmosphere and hard-nosed kids that loved playing ball. And Friday nights there in Mesa were just unbelievable. I mean, there was not a place I'd rather be on a Friday night than in that stadium, the smell of manure and Mountain View Toro football. It was so cool. And I had sideline access because my neighbor down the street, who actually was pretty influential as well, like I should probably talk about him also. His name is Greg Brady, played quarterback at USC. He was the guy that actually taught me my first dropbacks. He happened to see my dad and I standing out in the road playing catch and just kind of walked down and said, hey, you know, like I noticed you guys are always playing catch. And that's kind of how it all started. And he's like, well, I know quarterbacking. I can teach your son some dropbacks. His brother was the JV football coach. And so we would get to go on the sidelines and just to see the players up close, to slap their hands, the sweat, the hits, the touchdowns. I was so close to the action. And I was super fortunate as well to then, when I signed up for my first couple seasons of Pop Warner football, I just happened to land on a team that I was not even boundary like for. My team that I grew up on, like that I grew up the boundary for, was full. And I went to the late signups And the only team that had a spot was a team out near Apache Junction, like East Mesa. And I just happened to land on that team. And it was the greatest blessing of my life because I had an unbelievable coach in Pat Ramos. The community, the family feeling that we had, we rode together from like 9 years old all the way to 14. And our team was the Sonombres. The funny thing was the league ran out of names. Every team was these Native Americans names. So it was like the Tontos, the Navajos, the Mohicans, the all these teams. They didn't have any left. And so my coach was like, well, we'll just be the Sonombres. We'll just be without name. And it was an unbelievable experience to be on that team. We won so many games. We played in tough games. We got to be in these awesome. I mean, it was the coolest experience to have that be my youth experience linked with what I was watching of this just Mountain View Toro legacy being built. And just there was nothing more than I wanted than to be a Mountain View Toro football player. And so all of that just kind of fed into this, you know, the pride, the culture, I knew what it was going to take to be a Mountain View Toro football player. It's going to be tons of hard work, the discipline, the sacrifice. You got to be tough as nails. Like, I just ate all of that up. And then the movie Rudy comes out. And here I am, this scrawny kid that a lot of people told me right to my face, there's no way those dreams you have are ever going to be accomplished. There's no way. I mean, I was being told, like, you're never going to be a starting quarterback in high school. Now, it wasn't by the people on my Sonombres, and it wasn't by the people that I considered close. It was the outside, right? It was the kids at school that would laugh at me. It was when I was in eighth grade competing to be the starting quarterback and I'm 5 foot nothing and the starter's a 6 foot kid, the football coach that walks up was like, look, Beck, I'm going to do you a favor, man. Like, I know you and your dad got high hopes for you, but you know, your best chance you got is to probably be some small high school wideout. Like, it was that group and that movie Rudy that just inspired me of like, you don't listen to what anybody says. Like, you believe in yourself, you know the story you're going after, you give it everything you got. And no matter how many times you get knocked down, you just get back up. All of those things tied together just were so impactful in my life. And you know what? For my dad as well, like, he just believed in me all the time. And my feeling about myself, I felt like my dad felt that way as well. And I'm sure he took a lot of heat maybe when he would say, well, yeah, my kid has these dreams of being a quarterback or playing in college. I'm sure people laughed at him in his face and probably thought my dad was crazy. And I love that never deterred him from the feelings that he gave to me, like, John, you can do this. And the way we're going to do that is we're just going to go back out to the field. We're just going to keep training. And when everybody's not training, you'll be training. And on Friday nights after the football games, we're going to go on the field and throw. And on Tuesday nights, when you get your homework done, we're going to stand out in front of the house and we're going to grab the trash cans. And my dad built these big wooden dummies and we would line them up in the street as defensive players. And he'd be like, we're going to throw into windows before I get there. We're going to put trash cans in your face so you can barely see me. And I bet we look crazy. And we had yard markers sprayed on the street. But I loved it. I loved it. And those are great memories.
When BYU came calling, obviously with your history with the program, your family's history, its lineage with quarterbacks, that speaks for itself. When BYU came calling, was it game over, or what was the recruiting process that ultimately got you to BYU?
Well, this is kind of the funny one because I do have great memories of Provo as a kid, but then my family moved to Mesa, and all of my memories are at Sun Devil Stadium. We became season ticket holders right when we moved there. My dad would always let me bring buddies from my football team. They actually got tickets next to us. We had like a group of people that we went to every single game. And in high school, if my dad was busy or something, he'd be like, just take the tickets and take your buddies. And we never missed a game. And so we were really, really big ASU fans. And in high school, there was a period of time where it was a little bit tough for BYU. And you know, I'm not going to say that like the jersey change was part of it, but like it, you know, there were some differences, right? Like it wasn't the same thing. Now, I'm not saying it still didn't mean something to me when BYU was recruiting me. It absolutely did. When I would get the letters in my locker and it had the BYU logo, it still meant something. It still meant a lot to me. And Chris Pella was my recruiting person, and he was a big, big part of me getting to BYU. He did a great job of coming to my games. He did a great job of being kind to my family and me. But there was a time where it was difficult. UCLA was a great team, won the Rose Bowl. Cade McNown, Danny Farmer, they had a great team, and they were recruiting me. And Arizona State was recruiting me. And I would probably say like those three schools were at the top. And, you know, I got my visit to BYU. That was actually the first BYU football game I saw in Lavelle Edwards Stadium was on my visit. And I sat in Lavelle's office, and that was a cool experience because I'd seen him talking in, you know, interviews. I'd been to the Holiday Bowl as a kid. I'd stood in the San Diego Marriott right next to him. And so it was cool. It was cool to be in his presence as a recruit. But they offered me a walk-on spot. And I remember just being so kind of frustrated. Like, I have Arizona State. I have UCLA. I have these schools. Oregon told my high school coach, this was Tedford, was like, look, if John doesn't go on a mission, we're going to offer him a scholarship. But if he says he's going on a mission, that doesn't make any sense for us. And my high school coach was like, look, John, I know you're going to go on a mission, but you need to just tell him you're not. Go to school and then tell him you changed your mind. And I remember just being like, I can't do that. Like, I feel like that's lying. And I don't want to lie to a coach's face. So like there was this moment of like, what the heck? Like, I just got to be a state champion, a player of the year, a first team all state. Like, there wasn't anything that could have gone better. And man, this is tough. Like, Lavelle is telling me, like, we already gave a scholarship to a, you know, quarterback. We don't have anything. You can, you know, we'd love to have you come as a preferred walk on. And I was just like, man, this is not how I saw this going. And so it was tough because Arizona State stayed in contact. Even UCLA stayed in contact. And they were very much like, all right, we're going to keep this thing going throughout your mission. So it was tough. And this is where Chris Pella comes into it. Chris did a great job of communicating with my parents the value of a Book of Mormon class to prepare me for my mission and a health class and come on campus and get with the team. And Chuck Stiggins was actually my dad's strength coach at BYU, and my dad knew Chuck really well. And there was this communication between Chris and Chuck, Chris Pella, Chuck Stiggins, and they were like, John, just step out of football for a second. Let's talk about your development as a person. This would be a great opportunity for you to step away from home, come to BYU, be around the environment, prepare for your mission. We will get you working with the football team. You'll do the weight training, you'll do the conditioning, and you'll get to go throw. And Chris is the one that said, look, John, I just have a really good feeling that if you can be around the team, things may change. And I know that they say they have a quarterback right now, but I really feel like if they get a chance to see you, that might change. Because I'm the only one that's seen you in person. The only thing they've seen is tape. And so we did it. And I went up, started working with the team, very unsure of what was going to happen. To my first practice, I actually only brought up, I thought I was going to be issued gear, and I didn't. And the only gray shirt I had was an ASU shirt. And I walked out on the field with it. And this guy that was a scout for the Seahawks, who for some reason lived in Provo, he actually saw me and somehow knew who I was. And he's like, hey, look, I don't know if you're like trying to prove that you're mad or something, but like, just go ahead and turn that shirt inside out. I think it would be better if you did that. And I turned it inside out. I went out to the field, and I was throwing with the guys. And you know what's funny? The guy that was the kindest guy to me was Kalani Sitake. And he was great to me. Him, Tavito Fangawe, Brandon Doman, those guys were great to me. And I went on the field, and they looked for opportunities to include me. Doug Jolly as well. Doug was great. And they included me in things. And I felt like I got to go out and kind of do my thing. Reno Mahe, I got to throw balls to. And a few weeks in, Robbie Bosco comes to me and says, hey, look, I'm going to come out a little bit early. I can't be out here as a coach for you, but I can come out to the football camp. So I'm going to come out a little bit early to the football camp. I've been hearing some good things from the players. And so I remember watching Robbie, and he just came out with the campers, watched me throw. And then we were finishing a thing, and he stayed after. And he was like, hey, come up and meet with me tomorrow. And so I went in his office, and he's like, hey, like, a lot of good things are happening, and we're talking. You know, give us a few days, but I think, you know, some things might happen for you. And sure enough, a few days later, they called me into the office, and Robbie and Lavelle offered me a scholarship. And it was a cool moment. I didn't take it right then in the moment because I was still kind of mad at all the rest of the stuff. But it was a cool moment. And so that's why Chris Pella, you know, I'm forever grateful to him. I actually got to see him when I went and played in the alumni game. And I'm not going to lie, it was emotional for me. You know, I mean, shoot. it's emotional now. It's cool how somebody can be a big part of your life story in a moment. And they help you find a path, you know, that you have no idea how it's going to impact the rest of your life. And so I got to kneel by him. He was sitting in a chair. He's really old. I got to kneel by him and just say, "Man, Chris, you have no idea how grateful I am for the advice you gave me all those years ago."
There was way too much to cover in a single episode with John Beck. Coming up in part two, we'll talk to John about becoming the starting quarterback at BYU as a freshman, leading the Cougars out of obscurity, and navigating his way through the National Football League. My name is Jason Shepard. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.